So it says Vaishnavas and Vaishnav Shastras. So we're talking about a great Vaishnav today. He's Bhaktivinoda Thakur. But not everybody will see his mission in this world as the same. At the time he appeared, the British Raj was very prominent. They were ruling the country of India. And how would they see Bhaktivinoda Thakur? They would see him as a very great servant of the British Raj. Everybody really wanted him in their particular service, in their particular department. Why is that? Because he was so efficient. So efficient. Prabhupada says that, or the scriptures say that, Vaishnava is expert at everything he does. Why? Because Krishna's in the heart. When we have Krishna in the heart, then time is not working on this natural, on the same laws as for a materialist. Then there's a general people in India. How would they see Bhaktivinoda Thakur? Probably they would see him as a protege of the British school system. At that time, the British wanted to establish their rule and they wanted to establish their particular culture. Actually, it wasn't really a culture, but the Christianity. So that they could rule the Indians a lot easier. And so they educated the cream of the youth, the intelligentsia of England, of India. And Bhaktivinoda Thakur was one of them. And so I'm sure that most people would see he's a very upright and educated Indian gentleman. But how would the Vaishnav see Bhaktivinoda Thakur? Actually, he remained covered for much of his time. We'll speak about that later. But they would see him as being the shining light of Vaishnavism. How we actually re-establish Vaishnavism as respectable culture. But we'll just say a little bit about his birth. Srila Sachitananda, I'll be reading from the seventh Goswami and then maybe some comments most of the way through, just certain aspects of Bhaktivinoda Thakur's life. Srila Sachitananda Bhaktivinoda Thakur was born on September the 2nd, 1838, on Sunday in the ancient village of Birnagar or Uligram, located in the Nadia district of West Bengal. He was the third son of Ananda Chandra Dutt and Jagat Mohini Devi. It can be said that he was born with a silver spoon in his mouth, as both his mother and father came from illustrious and wealthy families. However, he suffered great miseries and trials throughout his youth. He was given the name of Kirtinath, a name of Lord Shiva, by his father. So this is the Bhagavad Gita says that one who fails in devotional service after a short period of time, then he takes birth in a Brahminical family or in a family which is wealthy. So this is Bhaktivinoda Thakur. Obviously, Bhaktivinoda Thakur is not somebody who's performed devotional service for a short length of time. He's coming from the spiritual world. But this is usually the situation that a devotee has all necessities of life. He doesn't have to struggle. Anybody who practices devotional service and they take shelter of Krishna, then this becomes very obvious. We may not get everything we want, but we get everything we need without any difficulty. But actually, and at the same time, Bhaktivinoda Thakur experienced so much difficulty. Vaishnav, you know, he's coming from the spiritual world. He agrees to come and preach on Krishna's behalf, and then so much difficulty. Prabhupada, so much difficulty. But Bhaktivinoda Thakur in particular had a lot of difficulty with his birth, with his health. So many different sicknesses came. And also with the family, I think there was five or six in the family, and most of them died. He says that when he was, his mother, the family thought generally he was the ugly one in the family. He says that himself in his autobiography. I was considered the ugly one of the family. But my mother said, never mind, let him be ugly, so long as he survives. The situation was so difficult at that time. After some time, there was only him and his sister left, actually, out of the whole family. Family lineage. Kedinath's parents, why does a devotee suffer like that? You would think that they come into this world, they'd have we'll look after, as Krishna would say, we'll look after you, don't worry, you won't have to suffer like everybody else. Just get in there, do your service and get out. That's what they usually do, isn't it? When a respectable person comes to a difficult situation, they show him, you know, he comes to visit a prison or something like that, they show him around and get out. He doesn't want to stay in that situation. But Krishna sends his most dear servant into the most abominable situations and also gives him some suffering. It seems wrong. So what's the reason? Yeah. That's true, yeah. That's one good reason. Is it not to purify them? Once he was in Vrindavan and he wanted to see the holy dharma, he hadn't been, and he got this sickness came again. And he prayed to Lord Krishna, please take it away for the time being. You can purify me later, but let me just see all the holy dharma. And Krishna took it away for some time. Then it came back later. But yeah, I was once in Manchester when I first started visiting the temple, and Ranshaw was in charge. And I could see that actually a lot of the devotees who went there, they were just a load of jokers. You know, they acted about, took prasadam and went home. And but one of them once said to Ranshaw, it's all right for you with these neck beads on. He says, you know, you can get the benefit. What about us? And Ranshaw said, for the doubting soul, there's neither happiness in this life or the next. And he completely took his breath away, this devotee. He didn't know what to say. And so that's the situation. This is where people think in this world. It's okay for him. What about me? We're all suffering more than anybody else. We've all got it hard. So that a pure devotee comes into this world and goes through everything we have to go through. Just so that we can't have any excuses. Prabhupada came at what age? 69 when he first set off. 70 when he got to America. So who can do that? Nobody can have any excuse for not performing devotional service and preaching. So this is why the devotee suffers. Just so that he can be seen as one of the conditioned souls and nobody has any excuse. A little bit about family lineage. Kedinath's parental grandmother was the daughter of Rai Jagannath Prasad Ghosh, who owned property in the district of Cuttack in the state of Orissa. And then on the other side, Kedinath's maternal grandfather, an aristocratic landowner, was fabulously wealthy. Bhaktivinoda Thakura says, my maternal grandfather had incomparable wealth and great estate. There were hundreds of male and female servants. That is wealthy. But how did he finish up? Later on we'll find out that he finished up with nothing. In his youth, he said that he wasn't interested in playing like anybody else. Young boys like to play, don't they? You can't get them to sit still for 5 minutes. Just like Narada Muni, he says, I was not naughty. And those Bhaktivedantas bestowed all their mercy upon him. So this is the nature of a great soul, that they're not like other children. I was once visiting one situation, and this young lad, he was a devotee of his parents were devotees. I've never seen anything like it. It's really uncanny. He's completely different behaviour to an ordinary person that age. He was probably about 8, 9, maybe 10 year old at the most. And he was completely quiet and subdued. When he was here in class, he was completely fixed. Everything he did, he was just like a person of 20 year old. You know, this is what Krishna does. When Krishna appears in this world, he's always ahead of his time. A great personality is not growing like an ordinary person. So this young lad that I saw, I could see that he was very special. So this was the same with Bhaktivinoda Thakura. He was he used to go to the gatekeepers and listen to, instead of playing with the children, he used to go to the gatekeepers and hear, you know, the story of Ramayan, Mahabharat, and like that, and other tales he used to tell. And one old gatekeeper, they call him Captain Knapp. And as Captain Knapp, he had a sword, and he was probably about 80 years old, and a truncheon, whatever. And he tell him a story about when he was in his early days, when he used to be a dacoit. And he went out, he was on this raid with the dacoits, and he beheaded his own guru. Can you imagine? And he said he was so shocked and frightened that from that day on he never stopped chanting the holy name of Ram to recoup. I don't know what sort of guru he might be, but, you know, the head of the dacoits. But anyway, this was a culture that, this is my guru, I have to atone for this deadly, this sin. So especially, and then at the age of 12 years old, he was married. And his wife was 5 years old. Of course, they didn't live together. I mean, it was like, at that time, they had what they call a sane situation. That in order to keep the female peaceful and keep the male a little bit, you know, responsible, they used to get them together early. And he said it was like a doll's marriage. You know, they were just two young people and they'd all the grown-ups there and all the servants and palanquin and so many things. But the philosophy behind that is that the girl knows she's got a husband and the boy knows that he's got some responsibility. And then after a few years, when they're a little older, then the girl starts serving the husband. And, you know, it's in a natural way. Goes to the house, cooks for him, and a natural development of relationship develops. So why is that better than external relationships? As soon as there's a little bit of disagreement, as soon as one's not satisfying the senses, then there's immediately divorce. 50% divorce in general society, and they tell me 70% in ISKCON. Proof of the pudding's in the eating. But then people, you know, the actual relationship was on a deeper foundation. It was out of natural affection. And then the secondary affection wouldn't be so prominent. So very important. And now in ISKCON, what do we do? In the beginning, it was Prabhupada married the couples. And then in the early days, but maybe not so experienced, the gurus at that time married the couples. And then because there was big failure, they blamed the system. And now it's like, do what you want. And it's still the same. No better. So, anyway. Yeah, he says that he developed talent as a philosopher, Bhaktivinoda Thakur. And he was educated by, or trained by, one Englishman named George Thompson, a former member of Parliament. He taught him the art of oratory. Mr. Thompson told Kidnath that he used to deliver lectures to the cornfields on his way from his house to Parliament. Practice makes perfect. Then he studied theism. Actually, in the beginning, Bhaktivinoda Thakur used to mix with the Ramohan group. And they used to have meetings, but it was like impersonalism. He didn't know whether God was a person. He was attracted to theism, actually, but he wasn't sure. You see how Krishna covers his devotee. And then as time went by, he started to read more, and he started to take an interest in studying the Bible, the Quran, and the works of Parker and Newman. And he actually developed deep faith in Jesus Christ. And this is noted with Bhaktivinoda Thakur's preaching, that it's Christian orientated. At that time, he was preaching to the intelligentsia, the, you know, the leading Indians, and also the British Raj, and so, and he was also preaching for the Westerners. He sent book, he sent the life and precepts of Lord Chaitanya. So it's very easy to read his works, actually, and relate it to Christianity. He was also very honest. Vaishnava is very honest, is that right? He doesn't change people up or anything like that. So, sometimes we use you know, this philosophy to back up our nefarious activities? Well, we're Vaishnavas, Prabhu. We can do what we want. But Bhaktivinoda Thakur, he had to take employment, or he went for the interview, and he got set on for a trial as a sugar merchant, assistant to a sugar merchant. He was like the treasurer, clerk, and so they were trying him out for a little while, and then he noticed that on one such assignment, he was marking off and the bags that were delivered to the sugar merchant, and this other merchant, he gave him a bag extra. Probably those things were done at that time just to keep business, you know. And he noted this and he said, I saw this as being very irreligious. So I went to the sugar merchant. I told him, he says, this is what he said. I told him it would be better, and the merchant advised him that it would be better for him to get a job as a teacher, that business life would be difficult for him for one of his principles. So actually that's how we should be. That what's how, if we are cheating people on the, you know, on the pretext of it's Krishna consciousness, where's our faith in Krishna? Krishna's actually supplying everything for everybody, but he's not supplying it for the Vaishnav. So a devotee shouldn't have to cheat. Bhaktivinoda Thakur is a typical example of that. I'll give a little test. What would you do if you walked out of here now and you're walking out the gate and you found a £20 note on the floor? What would be the thing to do? One may say, there's three types of people, isn't there? One may say, just put it in his pocket and walk off. Maybe somebody would do that. Another one would say, we can use everything in Krishna's service. many devotees say that. And another one might say, what should we do? What would you do? Everything belongs to Krishna anyway, doesn't it? So, we should find the owner and give it to the owner. That's our philosophy, isn't it? Everything belongs to Krishna, so we find it and give it to Krishna. No, we should find the real owner. we should find the real owner. Or we should find the temporary owner and give it to that person. Prabhupada said people will eventually come to us and they will think that... He says we'll be successful when Vaishnavas are wearing what? When high court judges are wearing what? Tilak. So you hear it with a twisted high court judge. You know, you can't trust. And another point is that Prabhupada said that people will go to Vaishnav to solve differences. So we have to be above suspicion. I was telling this story at another temple, and one devotee, it was an Indian actually, he put his hand up, he was in South Africa. And I said, okay, and he says, I was once walking down the street and there was a function in this place. And so as I walked down, I saw this little bundle in the corner of the car park. So he went to a little square bundle. So he went into it, opened it up, and there was $10,000 in this wrapper. He says, so I went inside the function, this was the nearest place, I kept it in my pocket, and I was looking around, and the bridegroom were crying her eyes out, and everybody trying to console her. So he went over and he asked, what's the matter? And she was crying away, and she says, we've just lost $10,000. And the bridegroom were trying to, and so he gave it to him. What we're doing if we use, the pseudo Vaishnav philosophy? We may say that, yes, they may go and misspend it, so it's better that we took a bit away. But who are we to say that? You know, Krishna gives everybody his due quota. What's that verse? Ishavashamidam sarvam. Everybody's got their quota. Anyway, that's enough on that point. Bhaktivinoda Thakur was very honest. His parental grandfather. This is a rare birth, a rare person. Kedinath observed the activities and schedule of his grandfather. He kept many cows, and there were plenty of yogurt and ghee always. He always had many animals, peacocks, swans, etc. The elderly gentleman ate nothing at all during the day. At midnight, he would eat kachoris, stuffed pastries full of chilies, or milk cooked with date sugar. He wore the saffron cloth of a sannyasi. During the day, he constantly chanted japa. Kedana saw him pull cobras out of their holes and kill them with his shoes. He was very strong and did not appear to be ill. According to one of the early biographers of Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur, Pandit Satkar Chattopadhyay, that gentleman, Kedana's grandfather, had once been a conspicuous figure in the city of Palaces, Calcutta, and retired to a lonely place in Orissa to spend the rest of his life as an ascetic. He could predict the future and knew when he would die. He could commune with supernatural beings. So Kedinath went to see him because his maternal grandfather sent him a message that he would soon leave this world. So that's why we're speaking about this gentleman. I'll read it. In the meantime, he got news that his grandfather was sick, but when he arrived, his grandfather appeared to be well. However, the old man told him, Do not leave here for 1 or 2 days. My life is coming to an end. On the third day thereafter, his grandfather had a slight fever. He sat up in bed in the courtyard of his house, leaning against the bolster, and he began continuously chanting the holy name. Bhaktivinoda Thakur recounts, he called for me and said, after my death, do not tarry many days in this place. That means do not stay in this place many days. Whatever work you do by the age of 27 will be the principal occupation. You will become a great Vaishnav. I give you all my blessings. Immediately after saying this, his life air left him, bursting out of the top of his head. Such an amazing death is rarely seen. His expertise is rarely seen in this world. Yes, so there's a little bit about... He was very expert in preaching, actually, Bhaktivinoda Thakur. And there was one section in the Seventh Goswami which explains how he related Christ's teachings to Vaishnavism. Shall I read that? Yeah? Yeah, sure. Okay. In the essay called To Love God, published in a journal at Tajpur on August the 25th, 1871, In this short essay, that Thakur analyzes the great commandments of Jesus and compares the precepts of Vaishnavism to it, revealing the further evolution of Christ's teachings promulgated by Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. It was Jesus Christ, who first said, "Love God with all thy heart, with all thy mind, with all thy soul, and with all thy strength, his body, and love man as thy brother." Jesus Christ of Nazareth received and uttered the words quoted above. To readers who are a little above the scale of ordinary men, these expressions of Jesus' teaching will actually have impact. So Bhaktivinoda relates them. I just brought it quickly. He wrote quite a lot about it, actually. He says, "Love God with all thy heart," meaning the affections of the heart perceived in all children as opposed to hate. What does he refer that to? He refers that to Shantaras. Then he says, with all his mind, meaning the intellect which knows as opposed to ignorance of good things. He relates that to Shantaras. Shantaras, yeah. With all thy mind, he relates to Dasyaras. And then with all thy heart, he relates to Shantaras. And then you must love God with all your soul is Sakyaras. And then finally, he says that this description of bhakti is in general. Then Jesus proceeded to tell us, you must love man as thy brother. That's Vatsalyaras. And bhakti, love, is thus perceived in the very first development of the man in the shape of the heart, then in the shape of the mind, then in the shape of the soul, and lastly in the shape of will. But there is another sublime truth behind the fact which is revealed to a few that are prepared for it. We mean the spiritual conversion of the soul into a woman, marriage with God of love, the fifth and the highest stage of Vaishnav development is this, which we call Madhurya Ras. So then Bhaktivinoda Thakur had to go to Jagannath Puri, was transferred. He'd been wanting to go there for a while, but they transferred him to different places. All the British commissioners were after, put him in their particular section because he was so efficient. And eventually he got the release to go to Jagannath Puri. But he was due to go to another place. And the particular superintendent there, Bhaktivinoda Thakur sent his servant to collect his belongings, which he'd sent on in advance. And when his servant got there, the person who was in charge of that particular section, he's a high minister, he wouldn't let him go. He kept him there for so long, hoping that, Bhaktivinoda Thakur would be forced to come. But anyway, eventually let him go. But this is how much they thought about him. But anyway, he went to Jagannath Puri, and there he was given service. He was given charge of the Jagannath Temple, and he raised the offerings from 54 to 62 offerings a day, and the standards were also raised. And in Jagannath Puri, he says that as soon as he got a great spiritual enthusiasm, and he wrote two very famous poems. We know one verse out of each of them. So shall I read the poem? Kompoyal, this is when he first got to Puri. This is about Haridas Thakur. On Haridas Samadhi, Saragrahi Vaishnav. So this is in Old English, but if we listen attentively, we'll be able to translate it into modern English. So this, don't forget, this is Bhaktivinoda Thakur's second language. O born of Muslim parents, Haridas, and trained in youth in Muslim creed, thy noble heart of Vaishnav truth did pass, thy holy acts the chant plead. Is there a soul that cannot learn from thee? The man must give up sect for God, that thoughts of race and sect can e'er agree with what they call religion broad. Thy love of God and brother's soul alone, bereft thyself of early friends, thy softer feelings oft to kindness prone, led on but thyself for higher ends. I weep to read that Qazis and their men often persecuted thee, alas. But thou didst nobly pray for the wicked then, for thou art Vaishnav Haridas. And God is boundless grace to thee, O man, united thee to one who came to save the fallen souls from evil's plan of taking human souls to shame. And he it was who led you all that came for life eternal's holy pure, and gave you rest in heaven's enduring name. The sacred blessings ever sure, the body rests upon the sacred sands of Swargadwar near the sea, or hundreds came to see thee from distant lands, to enjoy a holy thrilling glee, the waters roar and storming winds assail. Thy ears in vain, ah, Vaishnav soul, the charms of Vrindavan thy heart regale. Unknown, the weed of time doth roll. He rolls ill, he reasons ill who tells that Vaishnavs die when thou art living still in sound. The Vaishnavs die to live, and living try to spread the holy name around. Now let the candid man that seeks to live follow thy way of sure at time, then prosperity sure to him will give, like one song in a simple rhyme. So, says that, what's that one of the qualities of a Vaishnav? Kavi, isn't it, that he's a poet. Also, Prabhupada got that, what did he get the name? He was called Kavi as well, weren't he, but Prabhupada. When he what name did Prabhupada get? When he wrote that about his spiritual master, he got Kavi then, didn't he? Or some similar name. Yeah. So, so this is the, oh, that's that pastime where he tried to keep Bhaktivinoda's servant. So one major thing about Bhaktivinoda Thakur's preaching, which really helped this movement, is that he preached against apra sampradayas. Eventually, when he realized that Vaishnavism was the way to go, he started to read all the books, and in no time at all he was very advanced. But he saw that especially in Bengal, there were many asampradayas, apra sampradayas they call them. The Owls, Bowls, Dervash, Atibari, Chaudhuri, Shaki Beki, many different names. And generally they were materialistic Vaishnavas. What they call materialistic Vaishnavas? Prakriti Sahajas. Sahaja means Vaishnava, actually. Prakriti means materialistic. Prakriti Sahajas. So when you say somebody's a Sahaja, it's not really that you say Prakriti Sahaja. If he's a Sahaja, then he's a Vaishnava. So Bhaktivinoda preached very ferociously against this teaching, because what they were doing, they were misappropriating Lord Chaitanya's teachings. Now, how were they appropriating? Many of them were, using the teachings so that for their own sense gratification. And they were acquiring women for their sense gratification. You know, women became attracted to sadhus, and therefore they were imitating the ras dance. And so, you know, many people became influenced by that. What's wrong with this philosophy? When Krishna was called the gopis with his Murli flute for the ras dance, they dropped everything and acted just like these women. And when Parikshit Maharaj was telling, when Shukadeva Goswami was explaining this to Parikshit Maharaj knew what the situation was. But there were many devotees on the banks of the Ganges who were frowning, thinking, "What's going on? You know, women in the middle of the night running towards somebody, a young man this is not religious principles." And when Parikshit Maharaj saw the faces of some of the audience, he asked a question for the benefit of everybody. He said, "How can they, they had lusty desires? How can this be religious?" So Shukadeva Goswami said, he called him a fool. He said, "He asked this question in the seventh canto. Why are you asking me again?" Well, he was asking for the benefit of the audience, and so he related to what the question was. He says that when in the seventh canto, it was when Shishupal, he was blaspheming Krishna, and then he blasphemed him more than 99 times. Up to 99 times he was safe, but he went over the top, and then Krishna took his head off. And then everybody saw the soul of Shishupal go into the body of Krishna. And Maharaj would say, "Wow, such a rascal. How did that happen to him? He got liberation." And then in that verse, in verse 7, 1, 30, 31 and 32 in that particular chapter, he explains that if we intently meditate on Krishna, whatever our particular situation, we can obtain Krishna. We can get purified. If we've got lust, we can meditate on Krishna. That's what the gopis did. If we have anger, like Shishupal, we can get Krishna if we really meditate. Kamsa hated Krishna. He was always angry. So it seems like these Prakriti Sahajas have got something which is correct. We can meditate on Krishna in that way. And so many people can be bewildered by that. But actually, Prabhupada writes in the purport to that, we can meditate on Krishna, but what he misses out, he says, then he adds, and giving up all sinful reaction, all sinful activities. Prabhupada makes that point. This is the difference. Otherwise, what will happen? We'll just become more and more lusty. It's only by following the four legislative principles that it purifies us. Even a devotee who's listening to the 10th canto of the Srimad Bhagavatam, he should stop listening to it, it's explained, if he feels lusty desires, and wait while he becomes purified. So it's not that a materialistic person, without following regulative principles, can become purified by hearing about Krishna. Although Prabhupada, he put this into the Krishna book, he put it in such a way that people wouldn't be affected like that. If you read that story, it's not like, it's not, it doesn't attract one's lust. It's in such a way that we can become purified by reading that. So, one such person, they call him Bishaki Shane. He was like the Atibaris. The Atibaris, this is how it just shows you how this, how the philosophy gets blown out of proportion, diverted from its original meaning. It says that, I'll read it. Atibari sect of pseudo Vaishnavas. Atibari Sampradaya, which was started by a person called Jagannath Das. In the beginning, Lord Chaitanya personally ordered Jagannath Das to be a follower of Haridas Thakur. But later, Jagannath Das gave up pure devotional service and took shelter of Mayavad philosophy. Mahaprabhu rejected him, and for this reason he was called Atibari. And from Atibari, then this Bishaki Shane was one of the descendants of this misteaching. He claimed to be Maha Vishnu. Two of the yogi's associates posed as the Guna avatars, Brahma and Shiva. Living in the jungle not far from Bhubaneswar, he established a temple using funds that certain of the intimidated kings of Orissa had sent at his request. So this is the story of Vishaki Shane. Upon the arrival of the Thakur, the yogi rose from his throne. What happened is that he was a magistrate for that area, and because he was one of these practicing Hajjas, he was attracting women for his enjoyment, but also he was attracting women from the higher classes of society, and this was really disturbing the British. And he also said that when at some point I will dethrone the British from the rule of India, and I also will dethrone the King of England. And so they pointed to Bhaktivinoda Thakur to actually take care of this. And so Bhaktivinoda Thakur went to see this Vishaki Shane. He built a temple in the middle of the jungle. And this is the point where he goes to see him. Upon the arrival of the Thakur, the yogi rose from his throne and questioned him, "Oh Babu, I know that you are a Bengali and a magistrate. Why have you come here on this dark night?" Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur replied, "I have come to see you." Vishaki Shane then rejoined, "That being the case, please sit down and hear my teachings. I am Maha Vishnu, arising from the ocean of milk. I have come to this place, and very soon I will destroy all the Europeans, including the King of England. I have proclaimed this everywhere." In his autobiography, the Thakur says, "I went at night to the jungle and spoke at length with Maha Vishnu, and he revealed his vow to destroy the English Raj." "If you are Maha Vishnu, then why are you staying in the jungle and not in Puri, where Sri Jagannath Dev resides?" The yogi replied haughtily, "I am personally the Supreme Lord. There is no God at Puri. That so-called God, Jagannath, is merely a big slab of wood." That was the end of Bhakti Vishaki Shane. The police constables were fearful. This is when Bhaktivinoda went to arrest him. The Thakur gave the order to arrest the yogi, and seeing his men fearful, he personally led them, bringing them with him two police inspectors, a police superintendent, and over 100 armed policemen. Because this Bishaki Shane used to shake his head, and there used to be sparks and flames flying out of his head, and he could lean into a fire for some time and just lean out, and nothing happened. He could read a person's mind. He even read Bhaktivinoda Thakur's mind. So people were pretty on their guard against him. So they actually arrested Bishaki Shane. And then actually Bhaktivinoda Thakur was so merciful. Even though he was blaspheming Krishna, he sent for the cart to take him away. And he sat down with this Bishaki Shane and he started to preach to him about, you know, how one cannot be Vaha Vishnu. How one is always a servant of God. He had no animosity towards him. He tried to save him. And but when anyway, the court came, they took him to court and they tried him and they found him guilty and they sentenced him to, how long was it? Some period of time, 18 months in prison, that's all they got. And then as they were taking him out of prison, one of the British magistrates, he'd read up how these yogis hold all their power in their hair. So he jumped on him and cut his hair off. He'd been fasting for 17 days without water and food, and he just collapsed. Bang! Finished. And then everybody realised this is not Mahavishnu. But then, you know, sinful reaction is that after 3 months, he took poison and died in jail. So, anyway, just finish off by talking about Bhaktivinod later life. So in 1891 to 92, that's when he got 2 years freedom from his service with the British Raj, and he started preaching in West Bengal. He started over 500 Namhattas. Then he retired in 1894, and then he took Babaji Vesh. And then predictions. It was his specific desire that the teachings of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu be spread all over the world. Prithiviti Atiyata Nagadari Gam Sarvachapa Pachara Habit Moranam. My holy name will be spread in every town and village. So this is the position. Bhaktivinoda Tagore left this world in 1913, I think. Or 1914, I'm not sure. I haven't got the date here. But anyway, he was helpful in implementing Vaishnavism. He cleared the path. He cleared up Vaishnavism. In India, it was seen as a very degraded cult. Nobody, any respectable person wouldn't follow Vaishnavism. But Bhaktivinoda Tagore defeated the upper sampradayas, and it was replaced in its proper position. And then his son, Bhaktivedanta Sarasvati, then took it further by making over 30,000 disciples, I think, and thousands of maths, and establishing Vaishnavism very strongly in India. Then Prabhupada took it from that and brought it to the rest of the world. So we can stop there. Bhaktivinoda Tagore ki jai. Does anybody have any questions or comments before we finish?